We're going to talk about how to have a heart for God, or sometimes I call it passion for the Lord. If you want, it's a little easier to write one word, passion, rather than it is heart for God. Some things that we can do to motivate ourselves, some things that might be helpful to us. Now let's read Matthew 22, 34 through 40. We're reading Matthew 22, 34 through 40. When the Pharisees heard that Jesus had put the Sadducees to silence, they gathered themselves together. One of them, a lawyer, asked him a question, testing him. Teacher, which is the great commandment in the law? And he said to them, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. This is the great and foremost commandment. The second is like it, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commandments depend the whole law and the prophets. And Jesus was quoting from Deuteronomy 6, 4 through 5. A story that my husband often tells. He travels quite a bit with the navigators and his responsibility. And what if one of his trips that he were to come home and kiss me hello and give me a hug, and then he would proceed to tell me about his girlfriend that he had in New York, for example. And that if they'd really had a great time and they went out to dinner and she was really sweet, but don't worry, dear, you're first place in my life. I really love you the best. I don't think I would like that. I really wouldn't like that. And it's the same way with the Lord. He doesn't want first place in our life. He wants the only place. The only place in our heart, just like my husband. I want, you know, the only place in his heart as far as being a wife and a lover is concerned. To love the Lord, you have to know Him. We have to spend time with Him. I don't know a lot of you here at this conference, and you know how you when you don't know somebody, you look at them and you like them and you want to get to know them, but after you know them, they look different to you. Has that ever happened to you? You know somebody and you begin to love them, and they just kind of take on a different appearance because you love them now. You've spent time with them and you know what they're like and you have a heart for them, and that's what we need to do with the Lord. Psalm 27:4 talks about beholding His beauty. And beauty is a quality that's present in a person or thing, and it gives us intense aesthetic pleasure. It also gives deep satisfaction to the senses of the mind, and that's what the Lord wants to do. He wants us to learn to sit at His feet and behold His beauty, and He really is a beautiful person. And the more we get to know Him, the more beautiful He becomes to us, like with each other. When we know each other, then each of we are more beautiful. So Isaiah 33:13 through 17. Let me read that one. Psalm 27:4. This begins, it says, you who are far away, hear what I have done. You who are near, acknowledge my might. Sinners in Zion are terrified, trembling has seized the godless. Then it says, who among us can live with a consuming fire? Who among us can live with continual burning? And this was a new passage to me, and I was thinking about passion and heart for the Lord, that's kind of what it's talking about. Who can live with the passion and the heart for the Lord every day? And then it says, he who walks righteously and speaks with sincerity, I need my glasses, my arm's getting too short. He who rejects unjust gain and shakes his hands so they can hold no bribe. He who stops his ears from hearing about bloodshed and shuts his eyes from looking upon evil. Your eyes will see the king in his beauty, and they will behold a far distant land. And just the idea that we need to see Jesus in His beauty and the way He is and how much He loves us and spend time with Him. Beauty is often in the eye of the beholder rather than in the object that you're looking at. We spent 4 years in Argentina, and Argentina is a third world country. It's poor, not very clean, and a lot of different customs. And one of the first things that happened to me along the lines of food was we'd been there about a month, and we went to a great big barbecue with about 900 people. And it was the tables were all set up, and it was kind of in a big shed or a barn sort of thing. And I'm sure the potato salad had been there for about 2 days. You know, there was crust over the top, and it was very interesting. We were with another missionary couple. And a real special thing to do in Argentina is they take the cow and they don't tear the hide off of it. They leave all the hair and the hide and all of that. They, you know, clean the inside. And then they split it in half and they put it over a fire and they roast it. And so when I sat down at this barbecue, here was this tired potato salad and this cube of beef that was about this big with all the hair sticking up looking at me. And so I looked at my friend that I was, she looked at me and she said, "Now what do we do?" And I said, "We eat it." And everyone was watching us, you know, to see what the American missionaries were doing. But to the Argentines, that was beautiful. That was a wonderful meal. That was the nicest thing they could do for us. But to us, it wasn't. We weren't used to it. And my husband loves chinchulines. That's the small intestine of the cow. And they boil them, and then you put them on a barbecue grill, and they kind of come out crispy and curly and ugly, you know. Ugly little things. And he loves them. To him, they're beautiful. They taste kind of like liver. So different customs, and to him, that's just wonderful because he likes them, and he knows them, and he knows what to expect. So beauty is not always, you know, what one person sees. It's not always beautiful to another, but as we get to know the Lord, he will always be beautiful to us. In other societies, heavy women are the most attractive. To be thin, you're just real ugly. If you live in Africa, you're just, oh, they don't like for you to be thin. They want you to be fat, and that's beautiful to them. Interesting. So our view of God's beauty changes as we get to know him, and our opinion changes and conforms to his opinion of beauty and who he is, and that turns out to be praise. Just learning to praise the Lord and to spend time with him and not always asking. I spend too much time asking the Lord for things rather than thanking him and praising him. King David was a man after God's own heart. It says that in Acts 13:22. And he was a murderer and he was an adulterer. And yet he had a tremendous desire to know the Lord and to spend time with the Lord. And so I think we just need to ask the Lord for desire. And like Irma talked about this morning, keep asking for forgiveness and making sure that we're being obedient. And we too can be women after God's own heart, even though we're sinners. What are some things that take away from our walk with the Lord or our heart for God? Sometimes you can just have a physical problem. When I don't feel good physically, it really wipes me out. And it may not be anything spiritual at all. It's just that you need to go to the doctor, or maybe you're exhausted. You need to slow down. Is there anybody here who feels like they have extra time on their hands? Just don't know what to do with your time? Well, you're very unusual. I'll come and spend some time with you. And tell me how to work that into my life. So you may just have a physical problem. You may not feel good. You may just be spiritually worn out, tired, giving out too much. I want to talk about some different kinds of people and how people can do that to us, and hope we can figure out what kind of person we are and how many of these different kinds of people that we need in our lives. The first one is called the very resourceful person. This is all very. The VRP. These people are people who ignite your passion for God. You don't need to spend a lot of time with these people because they keep their starters, and they keep you going for quite a long time. I think Jean and Irma have been that to Larry and I. We don't see Jean and Irma very often, but whenever we do, there's always something in Irma's life that sparks me on. It gives me new passion to keep going. And I'm sure you have someone like that in your life. They're your mentors or your counselors. Jean and Irma were the ones who helped us with our son. They have a son who's hyperkinetic, and we were in Argentina and didn't have any spiritual medical resources, and we didn't know what was wrong with our little boy. And we went to visit Jean and Irma, and they kind of looked at Christopher and, "Oh, have you ever heard of hyperkinesis?" "No, we'd never heard of that." And so Irma gave me a couple books to read, and that was, I knew something wrong was wrong with Christopher, but I didn't know what it was. So that's the kind of person that the very resourceful person is. Jesus was this to his disciples. He spent 3 years with them. He was their very resourceful person. And then in John 16:7, he said, "I tell you the truth, it is to your advantage that I go away. For if I do not go away, the Helper will not come to you, and if I go, I will send him to you." So as their very resourceful person, it was best for him not to be with them for the whole time. He helped them, he was their resource, and then he left them with the Holy Spirit. And it's the kind of the same idea with this person. We don't need this person around every day of our life. They're a resource, and they will be a great help to us. Mordecai was this to Esther, wasn't he? He was her counselor, and he's, you know what he said to her, maybe you have been created for just for a time as this. And he spurred her on to do God's will and what the Lord had for her. The second type of person are the very important people. They are yoke fellows. They share your passion. I'm sure all of you who work together at the base have people that are that you work with. And when a problem comes up in the chapel, you know that when you bring it up and you have to work through this thing, that they all know what you're talking about. You don't have to really explain yourself. So they're your fellow laborers. Barnabas was this to Paul. And probably Aquila and Priscilla would be listed under this. The next type of person is the very teachable person. These people share your passion, the VIPs. The teachable people catch your passion. They're the person that you spend time with, and they're so eager and they're so hungry and they just want to learn all they can learn, and you love to spend time with them. They're very fun to be with. And this is what Esther was to Mordecai. She was his little student. He was her uncle, and to her, I'm losing my thought here. He was her resourceful person, and she was the teachable person. The next one, these are the very nice people. Somebody already figured that out. And they enjoy our passion for the Lord. There are lots of these people, and we like to be with them. They invite us to parties and to dinners and to socials, and they kind of want us to have a real social life, and they enjoy us, we enjoy them, they make us feel good about ourselves. They kind of boost our ego. But if we spend all our time doing that, then we don't have enough time to do maybe what the Lord has called us to do. And I love to be invited to dinners and all those things, and my husband is saying to me sometimes, "Now, wait a minute, we were gone, you know, Monday night and Wednesday night and Friday night, and, you know, we really don't need to go to this thing." So you have to be careful that you balance things out with the very nice people, because there are lots of them, and we like them. We like to be with them. This was true in John 6 when Jesus was talking to the multitudes. John 6, 60 through 65, there were lots of people there, and Jesus was talking to them, but in the end, he wanted them to make a choice. They had to make some kind of a decision about what they were going to do with Jesus and what they were going to give their lives to. The last person is the very draining person. Draining people. Maybe you don't have any of those in your life, but I'll bet you do, because I think the Lord gives us all those kinds of people. And they sap your passion for the Lord if you give too much time to that. It's the person who might call every evening at dinner and go over the same problem over and over again, or somebody who's not in a good marriage and been in it for years and there doesn't seem to be any answer. I have a friend who I love her dearly. She's very sweet and fun, but she would come at 9 in the morning and stay till 9 at night if I didn't, you know, plan through it. So I invite her to come 2 hours before I have, like, another appointment or have to go get a child from school. Because, you know, you're probably different than I am, but I can't handle a whole day of a person talking about tiny, tiny details and expecting me to respond and listen. So you have to figure out in your life how many of these people that you need and what's right for you, because you're not like me. We've had girls live in our home with us, and the first two girls they were with us for 2 years, and we had just moved to Albuquerque. And so when you move, you kind of go through a honeymoon period. You know, everybody thinks you're wonderful for about 3 months. And then they begin to look and say, oh, she's not perfect, is she? You know, they figure out that you're human, and then, you know, you lose some of the attention. And then everything kind of balances out, and you find out who your real friends are. And so we were going through this honeymoon period when we first moved to Albuquerque, and I was going to lunch with somebody every day, and I had a 5-bedroom house and 2 children and a husband that traveled and 2 girls that lived with us. Boy, I was crazy. You know, that was just too much. I just could not handle that. I had a lot of this thing going on, the very nice people. And I think it was necessary for a while because I had to get to know people in Albuquerque. But now I've really cut back, and I don't have that kind of schedule anymore. But to keep a home and children and go to lunch with somebody every day was really too much. So you have to be careful not to burn yourselves out, because you won't have a heart to read your Bible and spend time with the Lord if you can't stay awake. You know, it just doesn't work. Yes. Another thing I'd like to talk about is working within your spiritual gifts. This is from 1 Corinthians 12. Something we did in the Hispanic ministry this year is we gave everyone a test on spiritual gifts to find out, not really to find out, but to give them an idea of where to get started. Because if you're working, if God created you to be a butterfly and you're trying to be a goldfish, you'll be real frustrated. Mm-hmm. If he gave you the gift of administration and you're teaching the women's Sunday school class, you probably should be the Sunday school superintendent. You'd probably be happier, and you probably would get a lot more accomplished without so much tiredness and being worn out. So I'm going to pass out this test and read through the questions with you, and it's not the end, okay? It's just the beginning. There are lots of things you can do to find out your spiritual gifts. You can ask your friends, but this will get you started. When I pray for the sick, either I or they feel sensations of tingling or warmth. When I speak in tongues, I believe it is edifying to the Lord's body. I have interpreted tongues in such a way that the message appeared to be directly from God. Poor people accept me because I choose to live on their level. I readily identify with Paul's desire for others to be single as he was. When I pray, God frequently speaks to me and I recognize his voice. I cast out demons in Jesus' name. I respond cheerfully when asked to do a job, even if it seems menial. Okay, page 13, here's how you score yourself. Give you your grade. In the grid below, enter the numerical value of each of your responses next to the number of the corresponding statement from step one. That makes sense? Take number one and put down what you put, and go down through number two. Like on number one, I put 3. I put much. So I wrote that in there beside number one. Making sense to everybody? Turn this off. There are a lot of spiritual gifts tests that you can take. This is just one. And this one comes from the book by C. Peter Wagner that's called Your Spiritual Gifts and How They Can Help Your Church Grow. So if you're interested in reading that book and doing a little more work, that's where this all came from. And there are a lot of different opinions about gifts. And if you feel confused or have questions about some, but you might go to your chaplain or your pastor and, you know, we'll find out what his convictions are and get some help on that, because there are a lot of different ideas and we could spend lots of time talking about that. I'd like to know how some of you came out. Is there anybody that was surprised? No, she says. Was surprised over your gifts? Let's hear what you were surprised at. That'd be fun.
I was surprised at my knowledge.
Knowledge.
Don't worry.
You look like a wise person to me.
Oh, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Can I take my mask off?
Yes, you can take your mask off. What were some of your other gifts? Is it Sandra?
Sonia,
close.
Well, teaching was one.
Teaching?
But my highest one was, not math, I'll tell you that.
Not math.
Hospitality.
Okay.
Okay, we have a few tickets.
Good.
Tickets and have a lot of people.
Anybody else is gifted at hospitality? Did that come up anywhere else? Yeah, that was my highest one. And if I just had the energy, I would have 15 people for dinner every night. Oh, I just love it. See, and she's going, oh no, not me. Yes. You want to say something about that?
That's from experience.
Yeah. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there she was mentioning there's a big difference between entertaining and hospitality. Entertaining is usually for me.
Yeah, exactly.
And if you're hospitable, you're the kind of person that it really doesn't matter if the house isn't immaculate and everything isn't perfect. You love people and you can just have them in and relax and have a good time. We went
without respect.
Yeah.
They would invite you
back. Right. Mm-hmm.
Like the
that's right, the Kool-Aid super mom. We went to Bible study one morning at a girl's house and she had cinnamon rolls that you pop the can open and, you know, pour the frosting on and orange juice and coffee. And that poor girl was an absolute wreck. And I felt so sorry for her. And so I didn't know her real well, and so I asked a friend, is she okay or what's wrong? And she said, no, she just can't handle it when she has people in her house. Well, she obviously was not gifted at hospitality. But it doesn't mean that you don't have to do it sometimes. You know, just because you're not gifted at it, I'm not gifted at being up here in front either and teaching. But sometimes I'm asked to do it and I feel like, I need to just for my own personal growth. So I just wanted to not let you leave by thinking that if I'm not gifted in evangelism, I don't have to do evangelism. Because we're all responsible to be obedient and do the things the Lord asks us to do. But we may not be gifted at it. Somebody else, did you find a surprise from this little test? Everybody, not too much, huh?
I think what's so wonderful about it is that people do realize, you hear people say, I don't have a gift.
Yeah. Oh, yeah,
but
you do.
But help and mercy and goodness and all these things are there. They're needed more.
Mm-hmm.
I think on a base like this, you have to have a bigger base of this, then you can't have all leaders.
That's right. How many were you gifted? Of you are gifted in leadership? Came out on a high score. Three, huh? How about administration? Oh, we've got some administrators too. You got 15 in administration and leadership. Teachers, do we have some teachers? Ah, you're a teacher. She's a teacher. Girls come up front. How about serving? She was gifted in serving. That's all right. You had a 14 on serving? Well, can you?
Personalities or whatever always will be on the low side.
Yes.
Which means nothing.
Doesn't mean anything.
How you relate
for
to
you,
other
numbers.
How it,
Is there, are there more gifts that will be found together in people? clusters?
Yeah. I don't know if there are not. We did this with our...
Are you clustered?
Yes, she's very clustered.
I've got three that are really close by the top of that, everything else.
That's the way mine are, too.
The leadership administration I serve is all top of that.
Would this change any of your ministering at the chapel? If any of you feel like you might change some of your responsibilities?
I will not wash any more dishes.
I will not wash any more dishes.
Nobody can talk about habits.
Just.com. No, you're fine. That's fine. I'm just asking questions. Just to encourage you to work in the areas where you're gifted, and you will not be so tired and maybe not worn out and feel like you're too busy or spinning your wheels, because your work will be more effective. Right.
I don't have as much time as I'd like for the church, but I find a lot of my gifts are in the areas where I do it. And I have mercy and giving.
That's wonderful, sure. Yes. Perfect for your job. Perfect for a nurse. Well, anything else I wanted to say? Does anybody have prophecy?
Oh,
dear.
Secondary gift, maybe. Yeah. Okay, one, huh?
Paul says we should all desire that.
Yes. You're desiring it, not making it a goal, right? Well, let me just encourage you to continue to work in the area of your gifts and to try to make sure that your life is balanced as far as the people that you're involved with. We talked about different kinds of people, but the most important thing, I think, in having a heart for the Lord and a desire for Him is just to spend time with Him.